Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl, did you read your kids like bedtime stories or fairy tales? I was going to read my kids Grimm's fairy tales, but I found an original versions of it that were pretty gruesome. So we went and found another copy of it. Yeah, they really are grim.
I did. And that was, I don't know where I learned that from, but I think it came from various advices and it was just a nice way to teach them some of the stories and interact with your kids and make a connection, that type of thing. Get them interested in books.
Well, I remember one of the books had squirrels in it. I think it was Squirrel Nutkin. It was one of Beatrix Potter's books. And the squirrel was a bit cheeky and, you know, like a squirrel. And an owl bit its tail off. And it was kind of there's consequences for being too brash. Kind of thing. So it became a subtle reminder over the years, like, you know, don't be like Squirrel Nutkin. And it conveyed an entire lesson in just one reference. It is one of the powers of storytelling. Yet every culture that I've ever run across or ever talked to people about have a lot of stories in the realm. But back in our world, in reliability world, one of my favorite things to do with a client, usually we sit down for lunch someplace, and I ask, so what are the big disasters that you've had to go through, you know, big near recalls or all hands on deck, got to fix this, you know, that kind of stuff. And they all had three stories, the top of mind, they all knew the legends and lore and everything. And it was, you know, a big deal. What I found was that it usually was three deep and that was it. And then if I went back 2 years later, it might be a different three. So our long-term memory of these stories kind of faded unless it was really epic. Yet every organization has a set of stories they tell themselves. And it's amazing to me how that works. It's a way to pass on lessons learned to this is the way we do things here. All kinds of things that go into storytelling. And I'm just scratching the surface of this whole topic.
It is a wonderful topic. I'll just do a little self-revelation here. Is the when I started out my career, I was not a good presenter, not a good teacher. I basically was a good engineer and understood the basics of engineering, and then I learned the basics of reliability. But I didn't know how to share that knowledge very well. And so when I started presenting, my presentations were very factual. They were like, okay, here's bullet number one, or this is message number one, and here it breaks down into these sub-messages, and you need to do 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, and well-documented, cited. And the responses were fairly bland. Like, good, you got it. Thank you for that presentation. And but it never really took hold very well.
Right.
And somewhere someone taught me, and I don't remember where, the possibility of stories. And I had blown off stories as irrelevant, trivial distractions from the facts. And then they taught me this, and I listened to a couple of good stories from presenters. And it opened my mind to the subject to start learning more about stories. And then I started interjecting stories into the different modules that I was presenting, not long one. That I think part of my learning there was keep it short, you know, 1 minute, at the most 2 minutes, sharing something personal that relates to the message. And what a complete difference that made in connecting with the students, connecting with the people listening to the presentation, which could include, of course, people above me in management. And, you know, my first thought was, you know, what story could I possibly say or tell to a top manager? And there's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I And I practiced these, and this sounds a little silly a little bit, but I actually practiced the stories so that they followed the message and that I could deliver the stories in a way that was short but meaningful. I interjected that, and the responses were fantastic. So I now use stories all the time, but it wasn't natural for me personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get, like you, I've gotten better at it over time. And what I found, both in writing and in presenting, adding an anecdote here or there not only adds a break from straight facts and walking through a formula, for example, or an equation of some sort, it also allows the listener or the people we're communicating with to relate to the topic. They have much more likely, if I tell a story about an encounter in wildlife, like the raccoon raiding my trash can, as a relatable, even if they've never experienced it themselves, they can visualize it, they can see it, they can smell it, they can understand that it's a problem and stuff like that. Now, I wouldn't use that story. I can't think of anything reliability related for that particular one. But, although I do have one on redundancy I could bore you with. But the idea is that it provides a ladder or a framework for them to remember what you're talking about, something that they have either experienced or they could have experienced. So they can see it and smell it and taste it and so on. All those sensors get involved, which makes remembering what the main points are, what the story is, and what the lesson of the story is a whole lot more possible versus just saying, make sure you look both ways before you cross the street. But if you tell a story about your first time being in London where they drive on a different side of the road and we would look the wrong way and almost get run over. And curious is, why do they have great big signs on it say, look this way for cars? And, right. You know, that must be for us tourist types that don't understand where the cars come from. It provides a latching mechanism, for the lack of a better word, to convey a topic. I often tell the story about the first time I got involved with accelerated testing or just reliability at all. My boss said, hey, we need to know if this new product will last for 20 years. And like, wow, okay, where's it going to be used? Well, in the Italian Alps. Cool. I get to go to the Italian Alps for 20 years to see if it's working. He said, no.
No,
you got 6 months.
So. But I think one of the ways people connect and learn is through pictures and imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And words can help on that, but a story where you're basically storing, you're using words, but the story itself, I think, creates an image that people could connect with. Let me do a before and after just for fun here. This just came to mind. So when I would talk about FMEA, I would, if I'm talking to a group or an individual or a class, I'd often say one of the purposes of FMEA is to improve the design, the product design or the design of the manufacturing process. And I'd hammer that. It's to improve it. That's why we're doing it. And the
results, it's pretty flat.
Yeah. It was bland. And then I had an experience fairly early, I think it was in the mid 2000s, 2005, something like that. I'm on site with I won't say the name, but it's a medical device company. And I was looking at their FMEAs. They had no recommended actions. They didn't do anything to improve the design. They just found out where the problems were. And so I walked into the management office with a few of the executives were there. And I said, why are you doing FMEAs? And I showed them an example where they discovered these problems, and then there was nothing in the FMEA to change and improve the design. Mm-hmm. I said, well, that's not the point. The point is we don't want to share with the FDA our dirty laundry. And in other words, they didn't want to expose the fact that they didn't know what they were doing. They thought that was what the FMEA. And I said, no. It's the opposite. I'm sure the FDA is going to want to see that you understand what the problems were and then see how you fix them. And it opened up the door to them and they started, that helped. So I share that story now when I'm talking about FME, not all the time, but if it feels right, mm-hmm. I'll share that story about a company and I won't give any names, you know, that type of thing. And it connects with people as to why you're doing the FMEs to improve the design, because how silly it is to do an FME and not do anything to improve the design. And so that's just like a before and after for me personally. And each of the points of the teaching points, I have a little story that I add on there about a personal experience. And, yep. and where I was getting to on this is a lot of it is humility, where you've made the mistake. People can relate. If you're up there and saying, look, here's how I did it wrong, and you don't want to do that. And it just, people can connect to it rather than you always know what the answers are.
Yep.
Just some thoughts.
Well, it's funny. Once you start looking for stories in your own experience and your own background and stuff, and one of the courses I took or class I was in was, all right, sit down and write the titles for 15 stories that you could flesh out and keep them condensed and short to make a point. And write down the title of what you would call your story if you're writing, you know, writing a little fable of some sort. And then what's the key point? And so we just sat there and brainstormed and came up with all kinds of stuff. And then it was, all right, now, you know, turn your partner up and tell each other a story. And it was so much fun. And it was just practiced. And it was, you got 30 seconds to tell the story. It was very condensed. What are the key points? Visualization was important. All those kinds of stuff. But what happens is that now I walk around, and you can ask any of the students in my various classes I've taught, is that even here on the podcast, you and I both tell stories. And I'm quite sure you've told the story about your first reliability plan where you put everything in it. And it was that everything on it. And it was, you know, like you said, it was looking back, it was, oops, I did that. Whoa. You know, here's a better way. But you end up with a portfolio of ready to go stories to make a point. And it's anecdotal. It's self-deprecating. Oftentimes it's humorous. Sometimes concise. And it takes practice to bring it to be very good at it and successful with it. Yet it adds a bit more color, an easier way to remember the point or the idea that you're conveying. Instead of telling a joke at the start of a presentation, tell a story, a very short story that sets the stage for what you're going to be presenting on. And
you've just stimulated a bunch of thoughts.
Sorry about that. It's early, you know, in the morning.
Like, let me just start with, you mentioned you can start with a joke. I would say to people learning to present or to tell stories, that type of thing, be very careful about humor. And because we have a multicultural society, not just in the country we're in, but around the world. There's obviously lots of different cultures. And I have made the mistake of telling a joke in front of a culture that didn't see it. They don't get it. It's not.
You don't go to the Middle East and tell a beer drinking joke. It just will not be understood.
I forget what country I was in, but I used a metaphor of, boy, you hit that one out of the park.
Yeah.
And it was not a culture that understood baseball.
Yeah. Or cricket.
You did what? And so you have to be aware of your audience. So if you're going to use humor, be very careful about it. Practice it. Make sure you know the punchline and make sure it's appropriate for the audience that you're with. And then another thing that came to mind is when I've mentored people, particularly people that are starting out, they go, I don't have any stories. Oh, yes, you do. And so we talk about it, and because they say, well, I haven't done a lot in industry and that. Yeah, but what about in school? What about in your
day-to-day life? Yeah.
Everyday life, exactly. You've learned things And this comes down to one of the main points is you start with the message. You don't start with the story. In other words, you start, what's the message I'm trying to convey? Then you look for the story that helps to set the tune for that message.
Mm-hmm.
And people that are new, you still have messages that you want to convey. You may want to convey something about the importance of persistence. Okay, well, that doesn't have to be an industry. You could have a story about persistence in your personal life. And
how you learned how to swing a bat so you could hit it out of the park.
Yeah, exactly. So this the starting with the message and then moving to the story, you'll find stories. They're there.
And one way to think of it is, where did you learn this? How did you learn this? You know, I still remember vividly when my father, when I was, I don't know, 3 or 4 years old, taught me between right and left. And, you know, and it is, I don't think I've ever used that story in any professional setting, but it's, we have memories that gave us lessons. And like you said, it's very good advice to start with what's the point you're trying to make. And in the presentation world is you probably have one or two things, usually one primary thing you want your audience to walk away with. And it might be influence type presentation, or you're just presenting the results of a study you did or a failure analysis process and what was done and so on. Yet there's probably some takeaway you want people to have. And part of a good presentation of any form is to set the mindset of your listeners so that they're able to get the main point. And so stories play a pivotal role in doing something like that.
Let's frame two approaches, one the wrong, one the right. Let's say you have a message. One of your messages is don't ignore what some people call one-offs.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's a good message, don't ignore. Well, you could present that and just say, don't ignore one-offs, and then say that's bad because, you know, you're going to, that could be a real problem. Or you could look for a story where somebody ignored a one-off, maybe ask around or do some research, or you can even get on the internet, you know, and see about some catastrophes where you can find a story that relates to that message and then bring that in. Don't fabricate, don't make up things. I think it's important to have your sources good. Like I was addressing the American Bar Association about 10 years ago on the topic was you cannot anticipate everything. Because some lawyers say, well, you didn't anticipate that. So my point was, there's no way you're going to anticipate everything. You just have to be good at what you do and make sure you get the big hitters and nothing high risk, you know, et cetera. And, but there are stories about anticipating. And one of the things I started out with a little bit of humor, and I did my research on it. In the state of Ohio, there were two cars, and it was, I think, I'm going to get this wrong, but like 1895 or something, and they got in an accident. And I had some pictures of the cars colliding, and it was a little humor point. And the point is these, somebody developed these new cars, and they just didn't anticipate them running into each other. So they didn't have rules of the road, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was brand new. The point is that the story opens up people's minds. It gets them, it's not so serious. They can accept what you're saying a little more, and they can visualize it.
I have a story like that for anticipating misuse of a product.
Yeah, right.
And I start with, do you ever wonder why the glass on a flatbed scanner is so thick? Why is that structurally so sound?
Exactly.
Or the lid doesn't open. Why don't you let the lid open all the way? You know, what's the purpose of that? And so I use that as a starting and then tell the story. And it was right, it was from a team that made one of the first flatbed scanners, and the kinds of things they went to the library and got the biggest, baddest book they could find and dropped it on the glass and made it strong enough for that, but it wasn't enough. And then there's the rest of the story.
Very good. That's a good one. And that notice that opened up by a question.
Yeah. But it's just, there's so many ways to tell stories to embellish or set the stage or reinforce a point, to get focus of your audience, to, you know, this person knows what they're talking about. They have the experience. It's part of credibility. It's when done well, and we talked a few things about how do you do this well, yet when it comes across in your voice, it's really difficult to tell somebody else's story. You got to tell your own stories, because if you can be at that spot or in that conversation or, you know the details so well that it comes out naturally and it's not reading a script or anything like that.
That's beautiful.
It adds the emotional connection to the story to you, and it gets transferred in all of those aspects to your audience that they get it then.
Yeah. And that's it's all about. Yeah. Just transfer. Yeah. Transfer.
But yeah. It's one of those things that, don't be afraid of it. You know, pay attention to your favorite presenters and presentations and people that tell a story to. What's the context? How did it make, what worked, what didn't work? Which ones do you avoid because they tell horrible stories? And take note of those things, pay attention to it. And it gives you a whole slew of clues to go about doing it. The other place I would go is, I want to say Nancy Durante, if I pronounce her last name right. She writes a bunch of books on presenting, but also includes the elements of storytelling. And Carmen Simoni, I'm really getting her name wrong, talks about the role of stories and patterns.
You had a lot of citations in our book.
Yeah, no, I probably could find it, but one of the issues is that we have way too many citations in the soft skills area. It's hard to find stuff. But anyway, there's plenty of ways you can go about learning to improve your ability to weave stories and anecdotes into your presentations and discussions and so on. Done well, they're extremely powerful for all kinds of reasons. So if you're listening to this, and I don't know, did any of these stories resonate with you or give you an idea? Or did you suddenly remember a bunch of history, anecdotes from your past that you go, oh, you should hear this one? Let us know. Let us know what stories work for you and have made a difference or what other issues that you have with reliability. We can go back to questions. And if you have any questions for us, that'd be good too. But there's plenty of ways to get in touch with us. Go over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. A couple of ways to get in touch with us there. Carl and I and the other hosts of the show are available on LinkedIn and our About pages. So plenty of options.
Very good. Very good. I just had one other thought that I wanted to share too. And because I do want to hear from people on this, what do you run into personally? I know engineers are often more introvert than extrovert, and I would suggest practice. Don't avoid stories, but practice them. Practice them until they are natural to you, and that you can overcome the tendency of introversion. We want to hear from you as to what your stories are about telling stories and plus everything else about reliability. We want to hear from you. So great conversation, Fred.
Yeah, thanks, Carl. Thanks for bringing up the topic. I as you know, I like to tell a good story every now and then.
Yes, you do.
Thanks so much, Carl. We'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.